That's not me. I'm not dinging.
All right, whatever.
That's not me.
Okay. All right. We'll see. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Imagine having this guy for a friend. I don't have to imagine having my co-host, Mr. Dave Becella, for a friend.
That's me.
That's Mr. Dave. He is my friend. He is my co-host.
Breaking wind.
That's Dave. I am Ryan. We are still Movies on Up. Imagine having this guy for a friend is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can get at us on the Facebook, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guest to us via Twitter, @moviesonup. On Twitter, if you are correct, and if we choose you, you will win a prize package this week, and surely you'll drop dead upon seeing all the wonders contained within. And you still have time to get into the end of the year.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Contest, which is, I think, ending in a couple weeks. I think we got about three episodes left.
Yeah, it's like this... September 30th now, so I think it's...
You've got basically two more shots to get in before the end of the year to win our end of the year prize package. Before we move on into our discussion of Postcards from the Edge, I feel like we have to address the elephant in the room, which is our technical issues that we've been...
For a month by now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Having some problems over the past couple weeks. It's really nothing on our end. It's on the hosting end. We've had massive problems with the website. Many of you guys don't go to the website, which is fine.
The website is fine.
Yes,
everything
it is now.
Off of the website... Like the RSS feed that goes to iTunes, not working. So
because
hopefully
the
website has some problems. If you're hearing this, it is. Episodes are at the website. You can get them there. They should be back on iTunes by now. But if you went a couple weeks wondering where's Movies on Up, that's where we were. We're sorry.
We've been here. There was an episode that went up every week. It's just unfortunately most of you didn't have the easy access to it that we have tried to provide to you over the past 5 years. Actually, it's... really the first time in 5 years we've had any kind of significant interruption of service. And again, it was not that we weren't together, that we didn't have an episode ready. It was just the technology gods not allowing us to get those up. But
and then the people we want to fix it, making it worse in the process. And yeah, so
it's
been a joy.
We've had some of our best people on it. But even as we record this episode, we're still trying to iron it out. So hopefully by the time it goes up, we were able to get all of them ironed out. If not, know that we're still working on it. But I guess imperfection is a good transition into our discussion for this week, which took an interesting way of getting from where we started to doing an episode based on Postcards from the Edge. And this week, a movie that I've looked forward to all year, basically for 2 years.
Well,
since I left the theater for Force Awakens, I very much wanted to see the next chapter in the Skywalker saga, and that comes out this week with The Last Jedi. We were going to do a Rian Johnson episode, obviously the director of The Last Jedi, and we thought we would take a look at one of his earlier movies, either Brick or Looper. Dave hates Brick.
Preferably Looper.
I was going to try and convince him that Brick is a good movie. But then we started thinking about maybe going other routes, and one of the other routes was Carrie Fisher. We did a standalone Carrie Fisher episode last December, or it could have been earlier this January.
After she passed. We record so far ahead, so we don't always touch on Robin Williams. I think we did an episode on because he happened to pass like the day we were recording. But with Carrie Fisher, that was one of those that's like, even if it's a couple weeks late, we have to touch on that. We did, but we wanted to touch on it some more because she kind of rules.
Certainly, she plays a large part in this movie, maybe not as large as she once would have, and certainly isn't really going to be too much of a factor moving forward. But, you know, we will still see her on the screen this week in the role that she will always be best known for. So we started thinking about Carrie Fisher again specifically, and it would be difficult, I think, to do a Carrie Fisher top five list because we both like the same Carrie Fisher movies, and a lot of them are Star Wars.
Drop Dead Fred, and then 2 through 5.
2 through 5 Star Wars, yeah, right. So that was kind of tough. And then I had mentioned one of the things that she was known for in her career was being kind of a prolific script doctor. But it's very difficult.
But unofficially.
Yeah.
Like, you can find lists that she, quote-unquote, doctored, but I don't think there's any official list. And I mean, these are some great movies.
Last Action Hero.
Yeah, it'd be fun to do, but... script doctoring is so weird because it's almost like the secret society thing.
Right, exactly. So I guess we kind of wanted to try and highlight Carrie Fisher, the writer. So in no way, shape, or form do you have to guess who wrote Postcards from the Edge. It was based off her novel. She adapted her own novel. So if you want to see what she was like as a writer, if you've really never seen her outside of either her movie roles or, you know, Star Wars or whatever, this gives you, I think, the best insight into who she was as a person. So it would be kind of a fitting tribute to go over this movie. And I don't think Dave had ever seen it.
No, I watched it for the first time yesterday.
I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. I forget what list we were doing. It might have been Julia Roberts, because Mike Nichols came up a couple times, and I was like, man.
Director, What Planet Are You From? Starring Gary Shandling.
Yes, that's the one he's always going to be known for. But I do like a lot of Mike Nichols movies, and it just sort of like was kind of a twofer that we could do and highlight Carrie Fisher, highlight Postcards from the Edge, and talk a little.
And mention What Planet Are You From?
What Planet Are You From? Starring Gary Shandling, yes. So without any more further ado, we'll get into our discussion of 1990s Postcards from the Edge, directed by the aforementioned Mike Nichols, starring Meryl Streep, Shirley MacLaine, and Dennis Quaid.
And a young Oliver Platt, and Annette Bening that I didn't even recognize
exactly.
Until the credits.
Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss, Rob Reiner shows up in there, Gene Hackman. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of...
CCH Pounder yep. was like a... blew my mind, like
a lot of cameos I guess from some folks, and Hackman was great. He deserved more than and special appearance by. He bookends the movie, and he bookends it very nicely, but it had a hell of a cast. And the movie, it's strange because I don't think people really think too much of it now, or maybe they didn't prior to Fisher's passing last year. But it opened to $7.8 million.
Which in 1990.
Right. 1990 money opened in first place the weekend of September 14th, 1990. Killing Ghosts Run at number one after just 1 week. So it's not like Ghosts had been in the theaters for 2 months. This movie came out, finally eclipsed it. No. This was week two for Ghost. Postcards from the Edge got it. Death Warrant, Presumed Innocent, and one of Dave's favorites, Flatliners, round out your top five for that week. Movie went on to gross just over $39 million, which puts it at number 2,039 on the all-time domestic list, one spot below this 2002 Eddie Griffin, Chris Kattan spy comedy.
Oh, what was the name of that? Undercover? Not Undercover. Was it Undercover Brother?
It was Undercover okay. Brother, indeed. And it is one spot above a 2005 movie about America Ferrera's pants.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Indeed.
And Blake Lively's pants and
yes,
two other people's pants.
Yes.
Alexis Bledel.
I was going to mention Blake Lively because that's like one of her first kind of big time roles, at least on the big screen. But I thought that might have been a stretch. But America Ferrera, sure.
That's a stretch. Ferrera getting in the same jeans as Blake Lively. I love America Ferrera.
You said
I
that.
I love
not
her
me.
To death.
Just for a bit of context, this movie sits 15 spots ahead of Pod Favorite Stardust, which grossed...
I love that movie.
I know, right? That's why I called it Pod Favorite. $38.6 million, and Stardust grossed about $50,000 less than 1984's Breakin', the film that would launch the Breakin' cinematic universe, which, of course, Dave loves fantasies, Matt Vaughn, and dance movies. Yeah. Now, if Matt Vaughn would just make a fantasy dance movie... I guess we would all be complete.
I would be into that.
This movie is kind of confusing in that it's easy to look at the characters in Postcards from the Edge and think that this is based on Carrie Fisher's life. And in many instances, it is, but it's also not. It's not a biopic.
Just to piggyback on that, because that's one of the points I wanted to make.
Yeah.
If you followed Carrie Fisher, if you've went back and watched interviews from when we were young kids... and you've seen her career, it feels like a Carrie Fisher biopic. Like, it really does, because her personality is everywhere in this movie. And Meryl Streep does such a good job that it feels like she is playing Carrie Fisher with the mom. You know, Shirley MacLaine does a great job, too. Like, it feels like a Carrie Fisher biopic, but it's not.
Right. The parallels are there. You have... I guess what would be considered By the time we meet Suzanne in her career, this would have been post Carrie Fisher in Star Wars. So she's kind of a middle of the road actress living in the shadow of her famous mother. You've got your drug addiction, etc. But this did not happen to Carrie Fisher, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And I think the greatest example of these characters aren't the actual people is when Mike Nichols was casting the movie, Debbie Reynolds wanted to play quote unquote herself in the movie, and Nichols told her she wasn't right for the part.
And the casting was great. Like, Shirley MacLaine was great. Meryl Streep, there's a reason 27 years later she's still one of the best working. Like, she's really, really good in this movie. I think the thing about this movie, I think people know Postcards from the Edge. It may evoke the same thing as, like, Beaches. Like, I envision them from that, like, same era to where, like, you know what these movies are, whether, like, I'd never seen it.
Right.
I'm familiar with it. I know the gist of it. And this is going to sound like a weird compliment, but this is one of those movies you watch and it's like, what's the point? What do you gain from? Like, not a lot happens. There's not much plot. It's written around these characters that are really good characters. That it's just essentially a couple days in their life.
Right.
And, you know, they don't really go anywhere. So it's like, what do you really gain from this story and this movie? But it's still relevant nearly 30 years later because of the writing, because of the performances and the direction. They took, I don't want to say nothing because that makes it sound like I'm talking down on it. Like, they took this, what's the plot of it? This actress has a mom? That's pretty much it. And you took that and you made this movie that's relevant 30 years later that got nominated for 2 Oscars that is just so well done and so beautifully made that you can have other quote unquote pointless movies. And by the end, it's like, I just wasted an hour and a half of my time. But on this one, it's like, all right, I didn't gain anything, but I would watch it again. Absolutely.
We'll circle back around to kind of the plot a bit later, but let's start, I think,
has a mom. I covered it.
Right. We'll start with, I think, what was great about the movie, and it was the acting. And I want to start with Shirley MacLaine. One of the things I found fascinating about that story about Debbie Reynolds essentially campaigning for the part of herself, Mike Nichols says, well, you're not really right for the part because this isn't you. But I feel like that is the most accurate thing that Doris as a character would have done. Of course, this woman, played by Shirley MacLaine, would want to play herself in a movie that her daughter Suzanne
it's
may have
loosely
written.
Loosely based on her.
Right. Of course, to be the star of your daughter's movie, that does seem a very Doris thing or a very Debbie Reynolds thing to do. So on the one hand, you want to say, well, this is not really you, but you're really reinforcing the fact that it is by acting the way that this character would act. And I think the scene that perfectly encapsulates her character is when Suzanne comes home from rehab.
Party.
Exactly. Yeah. They're having a party, and Meryl Streep's a fantastic singer.
Oh,
she gets
she's
up.
Beautiful voice.
She does her song, and then Shirley MacLaine gets up, and it's a number. It's a choreographed number, and everything
is production. Like, it's a
everything is about her. So you see that this is a woman that's trying to be the star at every possible moment.
Well, even the line Meryl Streep, like when they're driving home and Debbie Reynolds is talking about, not Debbie Reynolds, Shirley
right,
is talking
yeah.
about her death, and just the line, why are we talking about your death at my rehab? Mm-hmm. Just like that sums it all up. And that party is just that line acted out pretty much.
And Shirley MacLaine, the first time we see her, she shows up at the rehab. It's like 15 minutes into the movie and she's got fur coat, the pearls. She's ready for like a press event. And she's talking to the other two fellas that are in the rehab, or maybe the one was, like, she's meeting her fans at this event, quote unquote, for her daughter. And that's kind of what it was everything was a way to be about her, which makes her a terrible character. But the way MacLaine plays the character, you still kind of like her.
She reminded me like Joan Rivers, where like Joan Rivers, when she's out, it's an event. No matter what she was doing, Joan Rivers had this air about her. And she was just larger than life, that no matter what mundane thing she was at, it was now a social event because of her presence.
And certainly a lot of the notes she had to hit in this movie were self-absorbed, make this about me. I'm kind of overshadowing my daughter in many respect. She did have a couple scenes, you know, the one where she's on the steps talking about alcoholism and what her mother did to her, and it's kind of a symptomatic thing. But I think most of the heavy lifting in the movie was placed on the shoulders of Meryl Streep, which you can do worse. By the time this movie got released in 1990, Meryl Streep was an 8-time Academy Award nominee. She already won twice. She would pick up another nomination for this movie. I believe she lost to Kathy Bates in Misery this year. She didn't win that much, I do know. But for the most part, I think she'd had her success in drama, Kramer versus Kramer, stuff like that. This is a drama, but she does have a lot of comedic lines in this. And I think, I'm not going to say that Meryl Streep's a great comedic actress. She's a fantastic actress that can do whatever the hell she wants. But she pulls this off wonderfully.
And a lot of that goes back to Carrie Fisher,
yes,
the star of this episode. It's written so well, and everybody's dialogue, her fingerprints are all over every character. And in some cases, like Quentin Tarantino, where it just feels like everybody talks the same, or some of these directors that have their own distinct dialogue where there's no differentiation and it feels almost forced, where everybody talks the same. This way didn't feel like that, because her writing is so natural, and there's just so many just subtle lines that I can't think of any. Like, as I'm watching,
my favorite is when Shirley MacLaine's talking about, you could have had Lana Turner for a mother, or you could have had, you know, Jane Mansfield, or blah, 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 blah. And Meryl Streep's like, those were options? Like, I could have picked any of them? Like, this is news to me.
It was just a dude laying there on the movie set, and she says something, and his response is so quick and so witty and funny, and then it just moves on. And it's like, this wasn't even, it's not like it was Dennis Quaid delivering that, or even Dennis Quaid, where it's like, you said you loved me. I did at the time, and this was like 2 days ago. Everything is written so smooth, and her handprint is on every single character. But it doesn't feel like, it's not Juno where everybody's talking like Diablo Cody. It felt natural, but yet she was in every character.
She was, and I hate to paint somebody with one brush, but Carrie Fisher was a smartass. Like, she was a lot of things, but perhaps chief among them was smartass. And the humor that she has in this movie, from Suzanne mostly, is super dark, but Meryl Streep was able to carry that. And if you don't, the way this movie is written, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's a one-tune movie, because it's not, but if you can't add punch to those smart-ass comments,
it's sharp. Her writing is sharp, how she talks. And that's where we're getting it this year with Mark Hamill, because he's doing all these interviews, and you get to just fall in love with him again. And that was one of my favorite things about Force Awakens, was her doing all the press and stuff. And it's like, you got to just fall in love with her again, because she was still charming. She's still funny. She's still a smartass. Everything that you loved about her growing up, she was still all of that. And Meryl Streep played Carrie Fisher, not officially, but she pulled it off.
Mm-hmm. And she was like that all the time. I remember going to see, it was 2007. The first time I went to a giant Star Wars convention, and Carrie Fisher was going to be there doing a panel, which is not surprising, but it was like an evening thing. Like, you had to come back, because they didn't want 6 and 7-year-olds sitting through a Carrie Fisher panel, because the woman didn't hold anything back. She was a complete open book, I guess, and no pun intended, because she wrote this book that the movie was adapted from, and it was such a personal story for her. But the thing that I've noticed more, because I had seen the movie before she passed, but the thing that's inescapable about watching it now is that there's this cloud of addiction that just hangs over the movie. It seems to have a happy ending when, you know, Suzanne's clean, her mother is maybe on the path to sobriety. There's sort of that repair of their relationship when they band together against Suzanne's grandmother. And maybe even a potential romance with the doctor, which the book actually begins with her saying maybe she shouldn't have left her number for the doctor that pumped her stomach. And it didn't happen the other way around as it does in the movie. But we know the story doesn't end well. I don't think, to your point, what is the point of this movie? It doesn't do a great job in showing the treatment of addiction. She's only in rehab for a very short amount of time. And then basically our protagonist makes the choice that she can be clean if she repairs what's going wrong with her life that makes her do drugs. And seemingly she does that and everything turns out fine. But it's not necessarily, I don't think, being fair to addiction. If anything you want to get out of this movie, I think you can get what Carrie Fisher was like, but it's not a particularly great movie about addiction, I don't believe. It's just kind of a window into her outlook
on
things.
It's almost like an afterthought. So many movies about addiction, that's what that character is. That character's an addict. This was a functioning addict, and this was a lot like what Carrie Fisher was, where you don't think of her as like, oh, she's a druggie. But she did drugs in her time.
And she had no problem telling you.
Yeah, but that's not what defined her. And I feel like that was Meryl Streep's character is, yeah, she had a problem. That wasn't who she was. And I don't think that's how people saw her. It just happened to be a character trait, not her character.
I had mentioned open book earlier, and I think that's probably the most important thing to take out of the movie. And like I said, it's not, the performances were fantastic. The musical numbers in it were good. Shel Silverstein got nominated.
For an Oscar,
the guy that did Where the Sidewalk Ends wrote that last musical number. He wrote a lot of music in movies, but he was nominated for an Academy Award for this. Meryl Streep was. Shirley MacLaine was nominated for a Golden Globe, but there were great performances in it. The movie was put together well. What story there was to tell, I think, was told well by Nichols. It dealt with addiction, but that's not the story, for me at least. For me, it was, the book was written in 1987, a couple years before the movie came out, and we weren't in a rehab culture at that point. Carrie Fisher opens up about her own addiction and mental illness at a time where people didn't talk about that. That was not normal. And if you did go to rehab, that was basically the end of your career. But her willingness and ability to try and show people that, hey, this happens to everybody. I'm rich. I've lived a great life. But I still battle some demons. I think that her just bringing awareness to addiction and mental illness makes her a hero long before she helped blow up the Death Star.
It's tough because, like, even just the cameo, which it wasn't her, but seeing her at the end of Rogue One last year was hard. Because that was right after. And, like, I'm not emotionally prepared.
The second time I saw it was after. The first time, she was still alive.
Yeah, I'm not emotionally prepared to see her on screen, but I will. Probably three or four times.
Yeah.
This felt like a piece of her was there. Mm-hmm. And even though you didn't see her, like, it feels like Carrie Fisher. If you've followed Carrie Fisher and you've adored Carrie Fisher since you were a child, you feel her in this movie 100%.
And as great as Meryl Streep is, you hear her deliver the lines. I don't hear Meryl Streep's voice. I hear...
It feels like a Carrie Fisher biopic, which is my whole thing about it.
But it's not.
Yeah.
But that was the point. I think why I wanted to do this, because we're not a book show. She wrote a lot of books. Wishful Drinking, Surrender the Pink. She wrote a lot of, this was a fiction, but she wrote nonfiction books. She wrote memoirs. I think she was nominated for an award for her performance in her most recent book. I don't know if that's an Emmy or what it is. I forget. But nominated as recently as this year for it. So she's been a prolific writer, but we can't really highlight any of that stuff because we're not a show about books, and I don't know how to read. But this movie, I think, is the closest, unless you just go watch talk show videos of her or interviews that she's done. This, I think, is the best way for us in our format to tell you, if you, you know, want to know what Carrie Fisher was like, watch this movie. Don't watch it because you're going to learn anything other than, God,
she's
this woman
writer,
was sharp. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because it's like, makes you wish there were more Carrie Fisher movies, written movies.
Maybe. And God knows there may be more than we think with the script doctor part of her career. She had her fingerprints in a lot of movies, but this one I think was and will always be the one that is the most Carrie Fisher. So I thought that was appropriate to at least highlight this week. And God knows we didn't need to do like our top five movies from the cast of The Last Jedi. It's played out. And God, there'll be another Star Wars movie in 2 years that we're going to have to do something else with. And maybe we'll do that then. We'll have enough John Boyega movies that we could come up with five. I guess that's the takeaway. Like, if you haven't seen this movie, if a couple people looked and saw that we were going to talk about and thought, oh, hell, I'll go check it out, then to me, it's entirely worth it so that more people could get to see what kind of a person she was. She didn't always make great choices, but she was honest and interesting about the choices that she made. The choice we're going to make next week is a choice that I think Dave would quantify as a bad decision, something he'd like to change. Jumanji comes out in the theaters. So we've already done our favorite The Rock movies.
And Robin Williams movies. He's not in this one.
Right, not pictured.
Can't quite do Karen Gillan movies yet.
Not yet. Do we want to do Kevin Hart or Jack Black? And for whatever reason, I thought maybe because Jack Black's been around
He's been around for 30 years.
It could be an interesting list. And I like my five movies. I didn't have a hard time, really. But
I like a couple of them.
But I think Dave struggled a little.
I like a lot of movies he's in.
Yes.
But not necessarily Jack Black movies.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Because most of my movies are like that. Yeah. Except my number one, which shouldn't surprise you when we get there. But to find out what that is, come back and see us next week. But until then,
keep it up.